the middle path, the middle way, in reading poetry. It just, even not knowing anything behind it, you know what it is. I just felt what this middle path or middle way was. I just remember hiking on dirt roads, and well, like even here on the road in here to Jokoji, and it's kind of like looking for that sweet spot, you know, not too rocky, but you don't really want it to be like too smooth, because you know, it's just looking for that sweet pop, you know, spot to walk down. The middle way also, when I started working more as a teacher, holding my own private workshops in art and coaching, I had like a tagline, like, you know, realizing balance or work-life fulfillment or something like that. And after a year or two, it became very clear that we're never really in balance very long. It's an active. The middle way and being in balance, it's a very active activity. It's not passive. It's not static. It's not like I would think, oh, I've got balance in my life, you know. I've achieved it, right? I'm just the right weight, you know. I just finished this class. I got a great exercise program. And, oh, my husband and I are in love again. And, you know, it's just perfect. Everything's in balance. And we know how long that lasts. Just sitting upright, sitting here in Zazen. Everything's moving. Our breath, just finding again that sweet spot on your sit bones. The middle way is a it's not stagnant. It's a very active, ongoing process. It's not like you give in. It's not like taking the middle of the road stance. On a relative level, it's just so very practical. As Buddha explained to the symbolism of a string instrument, it does not play well if it's too tight, nor does it play well if it's too loose. It's just this middle way. At that relative level, is such good advice. Not between two extremes. Not holding on to one extreme or the other. In fact, I believe that as I've been reflecting the last few days of what to share, which I'm still not quite sure what I'm going to share, but the middle way has been my 12 steps. Of bringing me back to what is here right now. Understanding that everything is changing. Making a decision or not, which is the same as making a decision, of moment to moment. What to do, how to think, how to respond, how to not to respond. Then, let's see here. I do have an outline, actually. Maybe. when I started thinking more and more, about the middle path, you know, I start doing reading. You know, I pull out a sutra, this, you know, that 3-inch book of the connected discourses, and you look up all the references to the middle path. And then, of course, I pull out the opening the hand of thought, and then, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, who's just fabulous in explaining these concept, complex thoughts of beyond the self. And, you know, I can find myself just drifting out there into this whole, you know, intellectual way of looking at the middle path. Reflecting on the absolute value or the absolute way of looking at it, and but. Right now, for me, this thread of this middle way is an active practice. Moment by moment, it's like sitting on our cushions. And we have that little moment or two when we think we're good sitting there on our cushions. Or we don't want to leave Shashin. We like this monastic life for a week. We don't want to go back. And I guess this is where I've been thinking about the middle way quite a bit. It's a, again, it's not something aloof. Because for me, it's in my face like every day. What is the right view of living? What is the right view? What's happening right now in front of me? How is it that I should react or want to react to something my neighbor or my husband said or a friend said? Do I come from a place of, you know, what I used to say or really want to say at that just that moment? Or do I want to take a moment and look at the word, look at the feeling, feel the word, feel the feeling, and then at that moment take some type of action or respond in what's right at that moment, not maybe the way that I would reply when I was a child or a teenager. In fact, can any of you really remember when you were a child and then all of a sudden you turned into like a teenager and then from a teenager to an adult? I barely remember going between schools. Nothing's very solid. Darn it.
I'm still a teenager. Sometimes.
Sometimes I wish I was still a teenager. I knew
too.
Everything. I was pretty self-confident. I knew an answer to a lot of these things. It feels so gray now. So this middle way, in the broadest relative sense of looking at it not too tight, not too loose, is really the substance or the essence of Buddhism. And I think this is why Jorge and I had such a good laugh. Buddhism itself can be referred to the middle way. Being upright, an unbiased attitude, seeing things as they are, seeing things as they is. opening the hand, a thought, it was something else I read. I don't know. I had this, Aristotle also had this idea, the golden mean, which was, you know, every virtue is a mean between two extremes, each of which is a vice. And Shakyamuni's own life illustrated these two extremes. Of course, as Shakyamuni, he had this princely, you know, so-called life coming from from his kingdom, his father's kingdom, being rich, leaving all that behind to practice some very extreme asceticism, extreme way of living, depriving himself of food, sleep, clothing. So his first teaching, or one of his first teachings, was about, it's not about these two extremes. It's really about the middle way. It's really about how we can live this middle way with the Eightfold Path. Having the right view, the right attitude, the right effort, the right concentration, and so forth, right action. It's very practical. We're in the floating Zendo right now. There's many of us sewing, many people sewing, and we are again, going through the precepts. It is. It's like, you know, the first one, no killing, affirming life. So you have this very succinct thing, no killing. You can take it for its the face value, no killing. No killing. The first thing I think comes up for us is people and meat and ants and spiders is our practice. In fact, I knew I was ready to take the precepts when sitting somewhere over here where Dawn was sitting, and one night in the evening here, and I saw the dreaded silverfish. So as a person that loves books and loves paper, a silverfish is not a wonderful sight to see. But that evening I saw the silverfish in a totally different light. And I managed not to smash it. Probably just loves these tatamis, huh? I don't know. Maybe he just made his appearance for me. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't seen one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, things happen, you know, when you sit. But I've also come to learn to practice it in a way of don't kill somebody's ideas. Don't kill their enthusiasm. Don't kill their hopefulness. Don't kill this idea of being able to put acrylic or watercolor on top of acrylic. You know, don't kill it. Let them find out for themselves what will happen. There's so many ways that we can practice this. It's the middle path, because at each moment we have a choice of making again. What is the, you know, what's skillful for us right now? Let's see, what translation do I like the most? expanding this middle way. Time.
Okay.
So does that make sense? I mean, so far. I mean, it's very relative. It seems kind of, yeah, so what? What's new about all this? Tom?
You spoke about speaking with people, including your husband, and taking a moment to consider your response. And that seems to refute the value I place on spontaneity. And I'm wondering if you could touch the issue of spontaneity, its risks and benefits.
Well, I think we kind of know that. I mean, I could yell at him and say, fuck you. I mean, I don't like that idea at all. Yeah. Or I could say, really?
That was on tape.
I think most people know I'm a potty mouth priest. What is, you know, for me, really, this is my lesson, too. I mean, here I am. You know, I feel like I'm a very, you know, self-affirmed woman. I can make my own decisions. I don't need no stinking man to tell me squat. I can live on my own. I can take care of myself, this and that. And if somebody that I care for tells me something that is contrary to that, I have a choice. I can say, you know, screw you. Or I could stop and take what he said to me and look at it. And I can feel it. And I can say, you know what, honey, I need time to think about this. Can we call a truce right now? And I'm really looking at some things right now. Can I still be a self-affirmed, in-control woman that has her own mind and way, and at the same time, bow to my husband's concerns and his requests of his wife. To me, this is what's really on my mind right now. Let's just get to the core of it. Thank you very much, Tom, because this middle way thing, as a layman practitioner, this has just been huge on my plate right now. And I'm so glad I just brought this quote that I found the other day. I was looking for a poem, a great poem that would have been good to end up, but so much for that. I spent, you know, more hours looking for that poem than preparing for the talk. But I did come across this. There's a great book called What Book? And it's Buddhist poems by, it's edited by actually Peter Coyote and Gary, can't remember just now. And it's a collection, very early on collection of Buddhist poems. And this is the first stanza of the layman's Lament by Judith Collin. Shame on you, Shakyamuni, for setting the precedent of leaving home. Did you think it was not here? In your wife's lovely face? In your child's laughter? Did you think you had to go elsewhere to find it? Tisk, tisk. Did I answer your question, Tom? You probably know the answer more than I do.
I'll think about it.
Please. So what is the middle way? What vow do I honor first if I have to honor a vow, my marriage vow or my priest vow? We all have these type of things to think about. In the sutras, there's all types of references in the Book of the Elders, the Pali Canon discourses, and one of the ways that it's interpreted, one of these sutras, and it's, you know, chapter so-and-so in, you know, this book or whatnot, but the Tathagata avoids the two extremes and talks about the middle path. What this is, that is. This arises, that arises. Through ignorance, volitional actions or karmic formations are conditioned. Through birth, decay, death, lamentation, pain, etc. are conditioned. Through, when this is not, that is not. This ceasing, that ceases. Through the complete cessation of ignorance, volitional activities or karmic formations cease. Through the cessation of birth, death, decay, sorrow, etc., cease. So this middle way is talking to us about dependent origination. This is talking about how nothing is just this. It's talking about our interdependency. As I was meditating this morning, I had this vision of Indra's net, this huge net of representing just everything, how we're all just connected. It's a great metaphor for, it's like a spider's web with a dewdrop in every little corner. And each dewdrop, then you can see the web in another dewdrop reflected. Everything is connected and reflected in this. And I saw this like path, might have been purple, just going straight into it. It's the middle way, the middle path. How that leads us to knowing that this is this and that is that, and I am you, you is you. You as I, that and this, and I think we sense it when we're sitting on our cushion. As Uchiyama and I think both Thich Nhat Hanh describe it as like a flame, it's like the candle flame. And you can't really say that, you know, oh, it's static, it's a candle flame, just like we can't say, oh, this is the self, right? It's flickering, it's changing every moment, it's melting. I'm growing older, I'm melting, literally. That gravity thing is something else. It's not static, and it came from somewhere else. It doesn't just exist. It wasn't just born like a candle. Depending on what it's made out of, it came from something else. It was made from something else. And how it was made from something else, it came from a person that gathered it or not, or the animal or the tree. I mean, it's like we know this kind of. And all this quantum physics and all everything is like confirming what Buddha taught us a long time ago. I'm, let's see. Well, I have a couple paragraphs that I can finish with from, I think I'll just read from this book, but I'd like to hear more of your thoughts. Did anything resonate with you, make sense, or Yeah, it's a humongous topic. And isn't it a great topic to be reflecting on? For me, that is the practice. Because, you know, we can't just think about this. We do get up off the cushion. We do what we do. Clean the kitchen, go to work, walk the dog. So tell me, what are your thoughts? What feelings are coming up for you? What's going on? I know Tom's still thinking about how to spontaneity of ourselves. Jonathan?
What I thought about with asking about spontaneity was that there's a difference between impulsivity and spontaneity. Mm. And that impulsivity can mean speaking without thinking. Whereas spontaneity, I think it usually means speaking from the heart.
That's very well. That's very nice. Thank you. Yeah, it's and then it depends on the circumstance. You could be in the grocery line and your spontaneity might be an impulse to them or something. But yeah, I think in a relationship like that.
I mean, stopping to think about what a constructive way to respond to somebody else's criticism or request, you know, that doesn't mean not being spontaneous. Just because you stop to think about what good way to speak to that person, you know, you might still be being spontaneous.
Yeah, the impulse is the profanity and the spontaneity of like, whoa, what are you asking of me? What other thoughts, feelings about all of this? How does it affect your life? Peter?
Just continuing on the idea of spontaneity or impulsivity, stopping to think, I think, is what Jonathan said. And that clicked for me that it's not always engaging the mind, stopping to think, but rather get in touch with one's grip.
Get
present. That's sort of coming back to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Not thinking, but getting present.
Mm-hmm. That is a good distinction. And that's our practice, isn't it? And that's why we sit our practice, is to practice coming back to center. And I think that's, you know, that's, again, you know, that's what saved my life, this whole practice.
What comes to my mind on some of what you talked about, spontaneity, impulsivity, maybe closer, is in waiting to be able to say something. I thought of a comment that was made from my friend about email, because I am finding I like email because I can craft a sentence and read it before I send it. So it's kind of being very careful with what I say, and also not allowing vulnerability. Spontaneous dialogue sometimes happens to me where I can feel embarrassed and also reveal some of maybe truer feelings, I want to say, and honest feelings. So I sometimes allow that to happen to be courageous in a way, to not be afraid that what I might say will reveal something that, you know, I love you, Whoa, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
So it's all really quite beautiful in a certain way to see greatly composed presentation and verbal dialogue or whatever, but then it is can be a veneer. Or
yeah. That's what came up for me too. Yeah. But it's so interesting. For me, again, I just keep getting this thing of not too tight, not too loose. Every single situation, it's hard to say, as we've all, I think, responded to this, I mean, very real thing. What do you say? Spontaneous impulse? You know, what are the consequences? It so depends. Every moment, again, nothing stays. Now, this is the thing. It's everything is changing all the time. There's nothing solid. So at this moment, you're feeling how you feel about this, exposing, not, or not.
I have a great example because of the activity of sharing art. I teach art. When I sometimes a student will say, "Okay, I'm going to have a drawing exercise." And they say, "Well, okay, I didn't mention what exactly we're going to draw. I don't lay it all out." And there are some students that are just completely paralyzed because mm-hmm. the spontaneity is just too much for them. Mm-hmm. So I say, "Well, put a mark. Where does that?" And then from that mark, where does that go? I wanted to use that word paralysis.
It is.
That's all.
Yeah.
This is so interesting to me because I'm a poet and this is language. But also, I come from a lineage of spontaneous prose.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics, and there's a lineage I come from, Shogun Trampa, sitting next to Allen Ginsberg, and Allen Ginsberg's like, "Trying to write this poem." And Shogun Trampa is like, "Why don't you just write it? Just write it.
Mm-hmm.
Forget all that, just write it." And and then Charles Olson has a theory called projective verse, which is a verse that kind of cuts to the body and gets to the heartbeat, and the cadence, syllabic presence of like a proprioception, and it shows that a resonance of a body, of word to body and speech to other. And spontaneity is a threat. It's like, I have no control. I think it can cut to the body and also show in the inner chaos to beautiful words, poetry, beauty that, you know, when I write long enough, I force myself to put together words I didn't even think existed, but they just came so from my body beyond here to here. But also, it's an inner reflection that I have no control of what happens up
mm-hmm,
here.
Mm-hmm.
Life is spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes to more of my question of like practice, like the middle way of like how to mitigate, to leave room for the beauty to happen, but also to not have too much control.
Yeah, it's a practice. You practice your practice as a poet. I had a not too tight, not too loose. I had the great pleasure of meeting Patricia Donegan, who I believe also has been a member. I know she's been a student at Trungpa for quite some time. And she shared with us of writing haiku and how they would do that. At a haiku conference, actually, where many of us believe in writing a haiku and you put it away 6 months, and if it's still good, maybe you pull it out. And she was saying how Trungpa just said, hey, squirt it out. Just squirt it out. And encouraged her to do that. So first, she's embodied.
First thought, best thought.
Yes. Yes. And what is this like getting to? I think we have to come to an understanding of what that means. And it comes back to also the paralysis in a way. Mm-hmm. What is this? Is this, for me, what comes up is the trust. Either the trust in yourself or the trust in the process. That's really a nice spot to be in. Good for you. Yeah, first thought. Very big sky.
Joe,
please.
What can help us recognize the middle way? You know, because I notice when I'm angry, the middle way is here. When I'm scared, the middle way may be over here. And when I'm happy, it's over here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dang it.
Yeah.
I would swear again, but I... So what's your question?
Is there any help to clarify our... view of the middle way, or the landmarks, or
I just wish that I could find my own way like that. I mean, sometimes I don't notice it until I'm crashing into the rocks. Mm-hmm. But other time, crashing in the rocks was exactly what I needed to do. Mm-hmm. This is what's so interesting about this practice, Joe, is opening up to. You know, I'm not thinking there really is a right way. There is no perfect middle path other than the practice ourselves of coming awake to what's happening and knowing that it depends on so many different things. I'm right there with you. I mean, I've done some pretty radical things in my life in the last couple of years, actually. I had this fantasy of stop doing everything. Like, just stop. Quit. You know, like, so I ran screaming away out of Shashin a couple years ago. I mean, literally. And went and had a hamburger. And it was exactly what my fantasy needed to do. Now, was that skillful? Angie was not happy with me. She's just now kind of getting over it. And so am I. I mean, it's taken a while. So I went, whoa. Then I called, I called Jacoji. I said, I'm off the board of directors. They go, no, you can't go off the board of directors. I said, well, watch this. And then I call up, my haiku society. I said, I'm no longer going to be doing this. I called Jacoji back, said, oh, by the way, cancel my talk. I think Cliff filled in for me. I mean, I just did everything. Okay, so I did it. I did it. I went, whoa. It wasn't so skillful, but I totally get that's what I needed to do at the time. And I kind of feel like even now, it's like I was on like a cleanse and putting things back in my life. Joe. Good luck. Thank you. It's a question.
Yeah, speaking of middle ways, in the middle of a day, there's this meal called...
that I'm not going to eat too much of.
Lunch?
Or not too little of. There,
I heard a bell. Does there a bell? Oh, do you have something to say?
Just a remark. We use the metaphor of the path sometimes, and I want to suggest that that's not a good metaphor for this, because we've already explored the fact that there is no path, that we have to make the path as we go. So the metaphor of the path is probably hurting our conception of this business.
That's interesting. Very, yeah. Don't you love words? Thank you. Oh, free.
I'll be quick. For me, the middle way is less about weighing out what the right thing might be to do in a moment mentally, and more about surrendering to the deep, intuitive listening.
Mm-hmm.
And a kind of clarity is there with that deep listening and underneath and before the thinking.
Yeah. And surrender is very active, isn't it? It's not a passive. I don't find it to be a passive. It's like being witness. It's like, you know, being in the middle.